just a ride. And we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings of money. A choice right now between fear and love. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
And now, coming to you live from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in Duluth, Minnesota, Dreaming the New American Dream, with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Pelichek, brought to you by the Rock Creek Free Press.
Welcome. My cousin Bill Mock celebrated his 59th birthday on Saturday, March 19th. I had mine yesterday on the 23rd. I had a better present, a visit from a Finnish friend I hadn't ever met face-to-face. Sanna Tikka is a researcher with a degree in history, and she likes to know the real history, not the kind that's drilled into us in school, the kind written by the winner. Sanna, my wife Lorraine, and I had an interesting lunch. Bill's birthday on the 19th, 8 years ago, saw George W. Bush bombing Iraq in the beginning of an illegal war. I figured much of W.'s motivation was to finish something his father hadn't, an attempt to show that he was better at the board game that he used to play in college. I used to play Risk too, but I knew it was a board game, not something to be played with real armies. W. never figured that out. Bill's birthday this year saw Barack Obama bombing Libya at the beginning of a possibly legal war. I'm not sure how much it matters whether it's legal, actually. The folks that get blown up by the bombs don't care much. They don't care at all, actually. They don't care about anything because they're dead. So anyway, here we go again. Damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. It's American tradition. Goes way back. Might be based on what Julius Caesar said about his invasion of Gaul. That's France, for those of you that didn't take 5 years of Latin like I did. Veni, vidi, vici. I came. I saw. I conquered. What right had he to do that? What right have we to do that? It's the right of might. But I think right makes might, rather than the other way around. T.H. White put some words in King Arthur's mouth about might and right, and I remember that from the show Camelot. Anyway, it's time to move on, and I'd like to introduce my co-host, Mike Pelichek, an American writer.
Hi, Chuck. The weather up here, weather report from Duluth is it's getting warmer. The lake, I was out by the lake this afternoon, and the ice is off the lake, except there's a bunch of it kind of huddled up by the harbor there. Tonight we've got with us Sam Smith and Tom Sterner, and they'll be coming to us from Freeport, Maine, and I believe Tom is in Redding, California tonight. So hello to everyone from Fort Lauderdale, Freeport, Redding, and Duluth, and as well as Vancouver. That's where Len Osanek is, the producer of the show. Okay, the New American Dream, what's this all about? To me, it's about becoming the country and the people we've always thought we were. You know, what Chuck talked about, Libya, and I wonder about the reasons for the bombing. Is it to help the rebels, or is it to protect oil interests for U.S. corporations? And, you know, really, what does someone who has lived in America forever think about that? You know, what are we all going to think about that? You know, the question is, why don't we bomb Israel? It seems like, to me, a fascist pit bull of the place. You know, I'm just asking. It's just, you know, really, we don't care about anybody but ourselves and our money. See, that's the thing. It's hard to fathom how we would do anything for anybody. And the extent of the danger of the radiation to Japan, how are we supposed to know the truth about that? At least from all these years of experience, we know who not to trust. Run away from Brian Williams and Katie Couric, Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. Run, run, run. See Dick run. See Dick run. Dick runs fast. Spot runs fast as well. They are on the same page. They do not trust Brian Williams and Katie Couric and Mott Lauer and Jim Lehrer and Barack Obama. Dick and Spot both know from extensive experience that they will not tell the truth. They do not tell the truth about anything. They are court jesters. There is not truth in Pravda or the Today Show or the Nightly News. This much we know. Good Spot. Spot has stopped running. Spot has stopped to roll around. Dick is still running. There goes Jane, too. Jane is fast. The most profound events in the history of mankind are the thus far successful lies about the involvement of the U.S. government in the attacks of September 11th, the faking of the moon landings, the CIA overthrows of governments around the world, the murders of assassinations of the 60s, Oklahoma City, Waco, the control of the media, the whole subversive takeover of the U.S., really, in the spirit of the Soviet Union. While unlike the people of the Soviet Union, we Americans still believe we are free. Lyndon Johnson, the Vice President of the United States back in the early 60s, planned and carried through the murder of John F. Kennedy. And even today, almost 50 years later, that seems like a bold statement. It's only because ours is a singular society. All the while, we pointed fingers at the Soviet Union, declaring them a closed society and pointing back at ourselves, boasting forever of a free and open society, and we're anything but. We have been anything but for a long time. The ones who ruled the Soviet Union, they had nothing on the ones who rule us. And did you ever see The Truman Show? I kind of wonder if America isn't something like that. These successful lies, really, are the most profound thing in world history. It's just so very well done. It's who we are. Americans don't make cars. We do psyops, like the Greeks did truth, philosophy, science, astronomy, discovery. And so the most profound big thing about this big thing called America is that it's a lie. And those people who do the lies, they want us to be afraid. And we cannot be afraid.
Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C. until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 Truth Group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
And now on to the news briefs. From the Des Moines Catholic Worker, Kirk Brown is a former Des Moines Catholic worker and an anti-torture activist. Feel free to join him and others at their weekly vigil against torture every Sunday from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. on the corner of 35th Street and University, West Des Moines, Iowa.
And the New York War Resisters League is sponsoring a workshop on how you can refuse to pay federal taxes for the U.S. wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Pakistan, and other countries. This introductory workshop will explain the techniques of war tax resistance, the consequences of saying no, ways to resist collection by the IRS, and historical examples of people who have been successful war tax resistors. It's going to be held March 31st. That's a Thursday, 7 p.m., Garden Room, Judson Church, 241 Thompson Street. For more information, call 718-768-7306. And also, there's a few people going to court, not court, but sentencing. Tim DeChristopher is an echo resistor. He's facing 10 years in prison on two felony charges for derailing an illegal sale of public land from the outgoing Bush administration to private oil and gas developers. This is taking place in Utah. He's sentencing for Tim is June 23rd, and you can go to www.peacefuluprising.org for more information. Sentencing for the Disarmed Plowshares group will be Monday, March 28th, 9 o'clock. The Plowshares activists, they went to the Bangor Air Force Base in Washington State, It's Bill Bixell, Susan Crane, Lynn Greenwald, Steve Kelly, Ann Montgomery. They were arrested on Naval Base Kitsap Bangor. It's the largest nuclear weapons storage area in the U.S. They entered the base in the early morning hours of November 2, 2009, to call attention to the illegality and immorality of the existence of the first Trident weapons system. They entered through the perimeter fence and walked through the base for 4 hours. During that time, they made their way to the strategic weapons facility, where they cut through the first chain-link fence surrounding the facility. They then walked to and cut the next double-layered fence, both chain-link and barbed wire, and entered the grounds. This bunker area holds the largest nuclear weapons stockpile in the U.S. So far, there have been approximately 100 plowshares nuclear resistance actions worldwide since 1980. For more stories on these disarmed plowshares and other nuclear resistors, other imprisoned resistors, excuse me, go to nukeresistor.org. And also for political prisoners in the U.S., go to prisonactivist.org. These are nuclear resistors inside prison now. Helen Woodson is at FMC Carswell. She will be out September 9th, 2011 for a parole violation, anti-war protest at the federal courthouse, Kansas City. Actually, she's been in prison almost continually since the early 80s. Leonard Peltier is in Lewisburg. He's serving a life sentence for the allegedly killing two federal agents in the Pine Ridge area in, I think it was 1975. Louis Vital is at FCI Lompoc. Michael David Almonde is at McRae Correctional Institute. Nancy Smith is at FCI Danbury. Christopher Spicer is at FDC CTAC. And these folks were all for a trespass at Fort Benning, Georgia, during the annual vigil to close the School of the Americas. This occurred on November of last year. And also, just a note that came to me by email this afternoon from Gary Coles. He's in Duluth, and he notes that today is the 31st anniversary of the murder of Archbishop Oscar Romero. He was a martyr for peace and justice, was assassinated because of his outspoken views condemning militarism. And like so many other martyrs in Central America during the 80s, he was killed at the hands of graduates of the U.S. Army School of the Americas. And that's relevant to those folks named earlier who are serving time for trespass at Fort Benning. Inmate Bradley Manning is at Quantico. And for information on Bradley Manning, go to Courage to Resist, 484 Lake Park Avenue, number 40 in Oakland, California.
Frank Donnelly is serving a year and a day in Lemoyne, Maine. He pled guilty to underreporting income as a non-public war tax resister. That fits right into what you were telling us about earlier. Carl W. Stewart, serving a two-year sentence, will be out on May 2nd, 2012 at FPC Montgomery in Alabama. He pled guilty to filing false income tax returns and failing to file as a non-public war tax resister.
Norman Edgar Lowry Jr. Will be out 6/25/11. He's at the Lancaster County Prison, Lancaster, Pennsylvania. He's doing 1 year for trespass at a military recruiting office, and this happened January 15th of 2010. He's serving a concurrent 18 months for probation violation for protest at the same office. Rafael Duffer is doing 22 years, FCI Terre Haute, conviction resulting from providing humanitarian and financial aid to Iraqis in violation of U.S. sanctions. This happened in 2005.
And that's the way it is, March 24th, 2011.
And now I'd like to welcome our guest poet, Tom Sterner. And I believe Tom is in Redding, California tonight. He also spends time in Arvada, Colorado. Tom Sterner is a writer. He lives these two places with his wife, Kathy. He has been published in numerous magazines and on the Internet, including Howling Dog Press, Skyline Literary Review, New American Dream, The Storyteller, and Flashquake. His internet pseudonym is Wordwolf. He's native of Colorado and proud father of five children and a stepdaughter. He also writes lyrics, sings, and composes music with his sons. He is the winner of the Maria Sergak Award for avant-garde experimental writing and was nominated for the Pushcart Prize in 2006 and 2008. He's published work includes two novels, Madman Chronicles, The Warrior, and Mama's Reign. And you can also find information on Tom at WordWulf, WordWulf.com. Hello, Tom.
Hi there.
How you doing?
Hello?
Tom. Hello, Tom.
Hi there.
Okay. Are you in Reading tonight?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Okay. And I just want to ask you, what I always like to ask folks, what brought them to writing, or how did you, what was the door or the trap door that led you to be a poet?
I suppose it started in my childhood because my father was an alcoholic and I had six siblings and he just had to find a place to go and hide, and that became my tunnel, that and singing to the kids in the projects and my mom.
Where were you from originally?
Colorado.
I mean, were you in the city?
Yeah, I was born in Denver General Hospital. Actually, hi kids, my five adult children and my grandchildren live in Arvada, Colorado, where Kathy and I will go when we're through here in California.
Yeah, and you've been writing ever since, huh?
Yes, I have, yeah.
Do you have a regular
routine?
Yeah,
I wrote my first story in third grade, and that was about 52 years ago.
Did they publish it in third grade? Did you have some type of a newsletter or something?
In the third grade?
Yeah, just maybe the third grade chronicle or something.
No, I think they wouldn't. I was always on the outside of things. I never was in doing anything within the school thing. We were moving 10 or 12 times a year, so we would like the poor badass kids who nobody talked to.
Could you read us a few of your poems, Tom, and feel free to tell us give us any background you can or any in-between-the-lines information you want to give us.
I'll do it. All right, this one here is one that Michael Annis at Howling Dog Press chose last year to put on the Omega site, Above and Beyond the Sky in Tears. Children suffering, villages peopled by the ghosts of fresh slaughter, naked gunmen pissing on the edge of dawn, children suffering. Children playing amongst the carcasses, fighter jets and smart bombs. The maimed stand by, leaning on crutches, they hop like crows, children playing. Children watching camels and half-tracks, one-handed beggars clapping an arm and gimme. Harsh as bird speak, they jabber and jab, point with the stump of a once thieving hand, children watching. Children sleeping, whose lives have been learned to ally the night, where if luck has provided a handful of crumbs, to hold them close in dark houses, with one eye open, await the dawn, children sleeping. Children alive, of moment, of whim, dim providence provides masks for the blind, shoes for the footless, Band-Aids for the starving, stick gum handed out by blue-eyed men in khaki, arms at rest, children alive. Children dying, a dark awareness enters their eyes, replaces their vibrant innocence at once with a yellow pus disease of war and hate. Gods and stickmen have denied them, cold steel in their hands, hot vengeance in their hearts, those whom survive are children dying. This next piece comes from actually a book of these things called Letters from the Monastery of My Heart. This is Dead Pennies. There were too many for me to count, 3 or 3 billion, I don't know. Confused and out of focus, sometimes I struggle to breathe. The guy singing the song is dead. The woman who wrote it, alive. She cried at his funeral, attempted to sing it herself, put everyone to sleep in the process. The dog jumping through hoops, everyone's amazed, but not the dog. It doesn't know how to be amazed, craves attention and the hanging bait, hook. The audience is bored, stupid, drunken, drugged, out of its mind, mad to be out of itself in ones, a group casual, sex collective. Thousands of heads and eyes twisting, turning, waiting impatiently to be entertained, turned on, and set free. The masturbator of ceremonies adjusts his watch, prepared to practice his art on 12 little girls in the front row smoking, passing a joint, and drinking beer given to them by someone's daddy in the second row. The show is late by design and generally disrespectful. Worship begins properly at 11. Unless it doesn't, then it will run late. Jesus is stuck in the elevator going down, down to lower levels. A thief stole the candles unlit, pissed on the hymnals and pews, an irregular stinking son of a bitch. The choir went seeking Amazing Grace, and there simply wasn't any left. There are pictures of soldiers on the wall, hung next to the images of the boys they were. Empty spaces, the men they might have been. Amen. I blinked my eyes, and worship was over. This one here I wrote. I was listening to Boulder Radio in 2003, and the lady from the BBC was interviewing children the day before the arrival of the Shock and Awe, and they were teenage girls, most of them. They're planning to go to a dance the next day, and their silly parents wanted them to run away and hide in the countryside, and they refused. They said, no, we're going to stay here. We're going to party, and it's, you know, we're old enough now. We're going to dance. And then the idea was that they would, after the Shock and Awe, if any of them were left, they would interview them again. And that's how I came to write Children of Baghdad, Boulder Radio. Involve me in your ringing, a chorus of minor voices, symphony of bells as I contemplate the end days. Children of Baghdad, speaking of dancing the day before, refusing parents' orders to flee into the countryside. Your peeling cascade descends, delivers me to the fall. They lay broken in the street, voices on the radio, those same bombs falling, children of Baghdad, chanting in mumbles of terror, those bodies where children once lived, reduced to tender places of fear. The war men shock and awe, playground bullies, bragging, shoulders pinned back, swagger. You may give fear our name, those whom survived this assault. We will name you liberated and expect you to act so in the company of your conquerors. This is no salt to heal your wounds, missiles to bring you peace and neutralize your bells. Children of Baghdad, I have turned off my radio. Witness to your loss of innocence, it is more than I can bear to witness your demise. And here's another one from Omega. It says, salutation. And thank you, Michael Annis. Finally, is that the same sky whose singer and the audacity to stand and howl, cry out to the heavens, defy the close luxury of Satan's gates, one foot in the fire, the other on the fence, threatening to leap, never going in, forgetting and never getting out, existence between stones and clouds, naive, ignorant of their differences. Yes, the sky is the same whose vapor, essence of soldiers slain on foreign soil. The singer voices protest, laments decades of violence, a path of loaded guns and empty boots, too many kisses spent on the face of death. A lifting of the shroud, mother, he was there. Someone made a hole in him, and he just leaked away. The young man on the last page knows exactly where he is going, would laugh in the face of his older self first, then embrace him and weep, their assemblage of years, the near darkness of art, broken promises and second guesses, the certainty that wrong never becomes right, stung to the marrow by the arrow of mediocrity as it pierces his heart and makes his name. There is joy on the pillow, peace for those whom sleep delivers smooth tunnel dreams, life mates on the soul train, clickety-clack, tracks of life. These are the poet's muse, the lies he tells himself as he whittles through the carving sticks of his days alone. Hollow passenger riding in the ghost car, spinning fantastic webs, inventing lovers, impossible loyalties, destined to be the one last man standing at the station. A familiar salute, hands lifted, proud brows, handsome faces, waving, waving, hello, farewell, mother. He was there. Someone made a hole in him, and he just leaked away. When I got to Reading, and this was about a year and a half ago, Kathy introduced me to the Reading newspaper, and I ended up writing this piece because of that. It's called Paper Nightmare. I very seldom read the newspaper anymore. I know I should keep up on current events, but usually shy away after glancing at the front page. I'm on the computer every day, writing, submitting, researching, searching, playing the occasional mindless games, executing time and crosswords. I see enough world news there as I bounce between sites to more than satisfy any curiosity I might have as regards this ever, never changing universe we live in. My wife Kathy likes to read the newspaper, and sometimes, especially on weekend mornings, I fetch the poorly written thing from the porch and take it up to her in bed with a cup of coffee. Mornings are smooth times for me, whether I slept well or not. I awaken neither agitated nor amused. I'm a man who wakes up in neutral, at ease and open, ready to shove her in gear and take on whatever the day has to offer. That laid-back morning attitude caught me unawares. A couple of days ago, casually sipping my coffee, reading mindlessly from the Reading Daily newspaper before taking it to Kathy, I fell into an old trap. There was a local article detailing a gathering at a baseball field, a memorial to honor a 21-year-old young man who played there in the boyhood summers of his young life no more. A soldier in Afghanistan, he stepped out of his vehicle and was blown to bits by a landmine. Another article appeared beneath the picture of a smug California cop. He had just finished training to take blood from and analyze suspicious citizen drivers roadside who might just be driving under the influence. He was elated at the prospect, glorified in it even, of looking into the eyes of suspects, checking out their arms before he pulled them over. He couldn't wait to plunge that administrative big brother needle into the coursing river of life of those he was paid and sworn to protect and serve. Nobody's right when everybody's wrong. Remember Buffalo Springfield? Do you? We are a country gone mad, a rabid dog biting itself, a more than exact replica of the monsters we were warned about in elementary school as the air raid sirens howled and we crawled under our desks as instructed, clamped our heads between our knees, no media to protect us. We are each and all standing in line victims of the police state. Dignity? Morality? Integrity? Personal freedom? Hell no! Somewhere along the way, we simply kissed our asses goodbye. I got desired height here, and this was on the New American Dream in January of 2009.
Tom, I'm going to have to stop.
We go.
Sorry.
Batch of devils, name 'em politic and war, nothing more. Sprinkle 'em on the morning, make death in the afternoon. Like Twinkle Twinkle is going to get you a discount on jet stream. When the stars in your eyes are someone's daddy's bombs, and no surprise, the awful price of yesterday's lies. We are the third soldier mowing machine, Mr. Gatling. Your genius is in our hearts. The metal of your love hurts. And something worse, the kindling of your fire. Waken slowly, child. Peace is the prize of moment. Mouthed epithets instead. I care for you. Energy is all we are. War, a misspent potential. There is nothing natural about selection, choices and near misses. There are no lesser animals, only those who think, and in so doing, wish themselves more. I guess I'll
Tom,
end this
thank
with
you very much.
Piece I wrote when I was working in a Super Walmart. I ran the electronics department.
Tom?
I almost killed myself every day.
Tom?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to stop you there.
Okay, good.
Okay. I hope you'll come back and read the rest of those. I know you got quite a list there. We'd like to hear them, but we have to keep moving on now.
That's cool.
Okay. And thank you very much, Tom Sterner, for coming on tonight. And we'll see you again in maybe in a few weeks.
Sounds good, Mike.
Thank you, Tom.
All right.
Yep. Bye. See you later.
This program brought to you today by your local hometown, just like you, down-to-earth, buddy, military recruiter. Come on. Come in and sit down. We know how it is. You need money and something to do with your life, some sort of skill. Something to do with your life. And without learning how to kill people, you wouldn't know what to do with your life. Hey, dude, we wouldn't either. It's fun to shoot a gun and kill people. You kill people, you protect America, and high school football and Coke commercials and the mall and your grandma and her porch and pie from Bakersfield to Bismarck to Birmingham. Hey, we could just go get a Coke or something. You like Transformers? We're your local military recruiters. Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines. For honor, for America, for church and grandma and Coke and pie. And for self-worth. And not being bored and a big loser. Hey, let's go kill some people. Hoorah!
Who put the bop in the bop-she-bop-she-bop? Who put the ram in the ram-a-lam-a-ding-dong? Who put the special agent in the news editor's desk, you think? Who put the lie in the New York Times, you say? Who put the Gulf of Tonkin in the whoopee we're all going to die in Vietnam thing? Who put the Oswald Ray Sirhan in the sophomore history text? PSYOPs. U.S. Naval and Army Intelligence, it's what we do. In Baghdad, Bangkok, and Bemidji, too. Paid for by you, member FDIC. And this message also brought to you by the BOP, the Federal Bureau of Prisons. Think you live in Merca with a capital M? Think you can do what you want? Think you don't have to pay taxes to pay for weapons that kill people who are opposing United States corporations? Think you would rather have your money pay for schools, roads, poor people, old people? Think again. Look around. Get your mind right and have a good day. We are the BOP. We are also proud to be sponsored this evening by Dumb Guys Hunting, Hunting Guys of Dubuque. Are you a dumb guy? Do you want to go hunting? There you go. Give us a call. We'll go with you. We are Dumb Guys Hunting, Hunting Guides of Dubuque.
And now I'd like to welcome Sam Smith, the editor of the online Progressive Review. He's been editing alternative journals since 1964. Longer than almost anyone in the country. Before moving to Maine in 2009, he covered Washington during 9 of America's presidencies, as long as almost anyone in the Capitol. His website, www.prorev.com. Sam's the author of 4 books, 3 at the request of editors. His works have appeared in more than 24 publications, including Washington Post, Los Angeles Times, Boston Globe, and Harper's. And he's appeared on more than 700 radio and TV talk shows. And here's one more. Sam, welcome to our show.
Well, thank you very much. Nice to be with you.
That's quite a career that you've had. What do you think of what's going on in journalism in America?
Well, I think like everything else in America, the media has been increasingly corporatized, and we have the vast majority of the media in terms of readership or viewership in the hands of very few corporations, and that's not a very healthy situation. In my lifetime, the number of reporters who I've known who are good skeptics, which is, I think, a prime characteristic of a good reporter, has steadily declined.
I think that's certainly true. More and more people follow that corporate line. On the other hand, is there anything that gives you hope in America? Are we going to last another 25 years?
Well, I think where people should look for hope is what I think it was Benjamin Franklin referred to, the little republics of our land, which are the smaller places. Because you go around this country in many, many different places, and the towns and counties of this country are still working quite well. It is basically at the top where the problem is. And this really isn't a surprise. If you go back and you read 1984, you'll find that something of the same was going on in Orwellian India, in England, that he talked about the proles. Well, the proles constituted about 90% of the people in 1984 in the book. And they were living essentially in sort of 1940s England. All the madness was taking place in a few capitals and major cities, and involved maybe 10% of the population. So I think, I think something very analogous can go on in America, where 90% of the people can be sane, and the 10% who are ruling us are a little crazy.
I'm not sure there are as many as 10% that are ruling us. Actually, I think it's maybe closer to 1%. And that's probably a similar distribution on money as well as power.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. There's no doubt about it. And one thing I was writing about today is the fact that money just doesn't affect the economy. It also affects us. And if you think about it, it's been said that the average American is exposed to something like 3,000 messages a day. That is a form of education that is taking place. We are being trained actually to be dumber than we are. And this is one of the problems that we have to deal with.
Trained to be good consumers. Go out and buy, and do it on credit. Really, just it's a horrible situation.
Yeah, and as my friend, the late John Rose, said, that the economy is meant to meet our needs. We're not meant to meet the needs of the economy.
Well, the last couple of weeks, we have had some amazing events worldwide, a couple of which we've talked briefly about on this show. The nuclear crisis in Japan. I'm mentioning the nuclear crisis because that's what's still going on. Of course, it was started by the earthquake and the tsunami, but what's happened is severe radioactivity problem. I'd like to hear your thoughts on the situation.
Well, I think we've long taken too optimistic a view of nuclear power, and if there's anything good that's going to come out of this, I think people are going to be a little bit more cautious about it in the future. It is, if you just deal with the problem of nuclear waste, we just haven't come close to dealing with that. We have a former nuclear plant not far from us where we live now, which was closed quite a few years ago, and they still can't find a place to put their nuclear waste.
Well, that certainly is one of the biggest problems. And then this week, now we're in a new war. We just can't seem to stop being the world's policeman or guardian or self-appointed something or other. Conqueror, I think, might be the most appropriate term. Where do you think that's going to go?
Well, that's very hard to tell. I mean, after all, we've been in Iraq for a decade. We've been in Afghanistan for many, many years. We don't seem to have a great deal of common sense about this. If we go back and you think about it, the one war that we've clearly won since the Second World War was the invasion of Grenada. That's not a very impressive record. And I think it would be helpful if we would try some other solutions to these problems, not just out of moral considerations, but out of the fact that the other solutions work better. I find it very interesting if you watch the major television shows, they very frequently have military experts on, and they hardly ever have a peace expert. But in fact, peace is much harder to achieve than war. Anybody can start a war. It takes some real skill to create peace, and so that you need actually more expertise at that end.
Well, that's very true. The people that can stand between parties that are having issues and get down to the root of it and somehow get the individual on each side to talk to each other. Those are pretty valuable people.
Yeah, I think that's true. Could you ask the engineer to turn up the pot on you? I can just barely hear your voice.
Okay, I'm sorry. Actually, we're very close to running out of time, but I'm only going to be able to ask you a couple more questions. Hopefully the next time we have you on your show, and I hope we will have you again on the show, you'll be able to hear me better. The other thing I wanted to mention before talking about what you're doing, what do you think about Obama at this point?
Well, I never thought very highly of Obama from the start because what I try to do when someone comes along like Obama is to find out who he is while there's still time to do something about it. And before the election, I found about 30 examples of things where I thought progressives would have serious problems with Obama. I think, if anything, I underrated the situation. My feeling is that, Obama is from Chicago, and there's a story they tell there of the guy who walks into the alderman's office and asks for a job. And the man behind the counter says, "Well, who sent you?" And he said, "Nobody sent me. I just came." And the man behind the counter says, "Well, we don't want nobody. Nobody sent." And from the start, the question for me was, who sent Obama? You just simply don't go from state senator to presidential candidate in a handful of years without it being on somebody's agenda. And I think we're finding this out now, kind of slowly, and to our dissatisfaction.
Well, that matches my thoughts pretty closely. In closing, I'd like you to tell us a little bit about the Progressive Review, and make sure that the listeners know how to find you. And you've got about a minute and a half.
The Progressive Review started back in 1964. It was then called The Idler, and it went online in 1995, which was very early. And right now, the print edition was in 2004. We're just online. What we try to do is, there clearly, as you can hear from me talking, that I've got opinions, but I try to really back them up with facts as much as possible to help people understand, especially to help people who are working on a good cause, not only to have the right sort of rhetoric, but to have the right information they need to fight the battles. And I think this is something that very often you miss out on because everybody is so busy using the rhetoric.
I applaud the use of facts rather than rhetoric. And I thank you very much for appearing on our show, and I do hope that you'll come back again.
Well, thank you very much. I sure will.
Well, it's been a long week in Mount Liberty, Nebraska, my hometown, Chuck. Church is important in Mount Liberty. The Catholics even have daily mass in the morning and evening, while all the others pretty much stick to Sunday. On Tuesday, the organ chords of the Agnus Dei drifted north, unnoticed over the sticky tar roofs of the brown brick downtown buildings. Time for Mass. The outside home thermometers read 42 degrees. The crash of the switch engine, hand hitches grasping and releasing, clattered over the lumpy nightcrawler backyards. The downtown shop owners checked cash registers. A U.S. West troubleshooter and a blonde letter carrier rubbed her tired eyes and sinewy biceps, sipping scorched coffee at the Hy-Vee deli while figuring gas mileage in their heads. Dust devils whirled from a sewer drain, instigating a Snickers wrapper into chasing a Marlboro soft pack around a light pole in front of the No Place Lounge. Inside the one-story, one-color homes on the west side, after the school bus lurched away, the husbands tidied in the rearview mirror, while the horrors of Aspen Run pursed lips and outlined in mauve the reflection in the refrigerator. They made sugar toast and read from hardcover Bibles, while surrounded by the furniture of their dreams, wondering if something might come in the mail. To the south, the melodies braided with sweet firewood smoke and drifted skyward, signals to heaven portending the awakening terror of the adults and the giggles of the children. The church organ musical kites fluttered up, then quickly down, riding the cool wind like kids on God's breath magic carpets. In the country, red and green tractors slumped silent in old ruts like leftover Christmas ornaments. In town, the pickups and cars for the 4th of July parade sat knee-deep in spring mud. Old men and old women plodded to church, dragging one black shoe after another through the outer door, up the linoleum steps, then shoved loose-skinned forearms through the swinging wood door and fell into the big familiar room, nodding to the altar like an old uncle in the living room. The men swiped caps from heads, genuflecting before sliding into the rear seats. They studied on the curled backs of the pews. Men accompanying women tramped farther up. The women knelt with heads up, back straight. Each wore a scarf or a handkerchief with bobby pins. Outside in Fords and Chevys on Washington Avenue, drivers leaned forward to listen to the hog reports, the school lunch menu, and stormy season advice over the sound of heater fans stuck on full blast. Men in upstairs bank offices listened half-heartedly to the radio on the window ledge. Requiring the big picture out of their windows, they oversaw the stalled flood control project to the west and the abandoned feedlots to the east. Frederick Manfred had christened the region Siouxland. He had written about the Indians and first white settlers. His genius paved the way for Siouxland Doppler Raider, Siouxland Co-op, Siouxland Laundry, and the Siouxland Chinese Chef. The Friedman twins, Popo and Epi, born on July 4th, began giving each other advice on the swing set of their backyard in town. Sergeant Charles Foy is buried under the banks of the Missouri nearby, the first member of the Lewis and Clark expedition to die contracting appendicitis in 1804. High school drinkers by the Floyd Monument could see within 360 degrees the blinking red lights at the tippy top of 10 grain elevators marking 10 towns in Woodbury County. Inside the church, the sacristy screen door wheezed and slammed. The wooden door brushed over the new carpet. The young priest bowled into a boy asleep, standing, a surplice over his head. A man in a back pew pulled a black comb from his billfold, straightened to trim his gray locks, and slipped the comb back. He flipped the staff to the coin pocket and pulled out a stapled plastic bag holding two rose petals. He kissed the bag, pulled the rosary from the jacket pocket, and knelt. He laid his seed corn cap in the pew behind him at about the same time as the prisoners in the Freedom County Jail cafeteria began shoving in spoonfuls of hash browns and scrambled eggs mixed together.
On Sunday, Mount Liberty Mayor Dick, his wife Jane, and the family strolled down their walk wearing hunter's orange suits, dress up springtime shorts, along with their camo helmets. They walked through their tree-lined neighborhood, enjoying the music from the windows. Jane sang along as she pushed the stroller. "Our son is an awesome son." The neighborhood radios handed the Heavens family off to the pre-service organ music, streaming from United Son God Reformed Lutheran Church. On top of the church on the corner, on a stout metal pole, blew a huge Sun God flag that once soared proudly above the car dealership on the highway. It waved in the breeze, rippling perfectly, back and forth. Two long, gently winding sidewalks lined with plants and flowers connected the church front steps to the walks on either side of the building. Small white crosses lined both sides of the walks. Scattered in the grass were baby dolls with red paint smeared on them. Arms and legs had been removed. Nearby, overturned, were several children's toy wagons. A glassed-in bulletin board in the middle of the lawn told the time of services, gave Pastor Steve Cash's saying for the day. "The Sun God says, save your money. Secure a comfortable retirement. Stay on the same page." A sign on the anteroom bulletin board announced an illegal alien auction next Sunday. Money to go to the summer Bible school mission trip. Dick and Jane walked down the middle aisle to their seats in the first row on the left, in front of the lectern. They greeted those around and removed their camo helmets. The kids began watching the tiny TV screens attached to the pews, listening by the headphones provided. Dick and Jane sat down, took deep breaths and smiled, gazing up the mural covering the wall behind the altar. A tight white t-shirt showed large breasts and the sun god flag with the slogan, One Nation, Under God. The congregation waved sun god fans, looked to make sure each stained glass window was open at least a crack. The windows showed scenes of Jesus slaying the dinosaurs. The organ began to play. The congregation rose to sing, then sat as Pastor Steve approached the lectern. He smiled, he nodded. He closed his eyes, took a deep breath, held it, and let it out. Pastor Steve opened his eyes and gripped the sides of the lectern. The congregation rose as one. They raised their hands into the air, shook them, brought their arms down and lowered their heads, keeping their arms out straight, keeping their hands waving. Boom chuckalaka, boom chucka, they moaned. 9/11's on our minds and hearts. Since 9/11, there could be no more 9/11s. If we recall 9/11 and be vigilant about the last 9/11, keep it always in our minds. Those near the aisle fell onto their stomachs, stretching out their legs and arms as if belly surfing, shaking their hands and moaning, Boom chakalaka, boom! Amen! Pastor Steve asked his people to rise or straighten up and open their Bibles. Please turn to the Gospel of Luke. Each of the Bibles had been blacked out, leaving only the articles. Please recite along with me the words of our Savior, said the pastor. A-N-D-D-D-D-N-A-N-A-A-A-D. Amen. Amen. Praise be the sun god, he said, and raised his hands, pressing them down as if pushing on their heads to make them sit. We're happy for this warm weather, he began, in a stentorian tremor. Warming is right and good. The sun god is good and loving and warm. The world must end, should end, will no doubt end at some point, and the righteous, the lovely, the saved, we'll join in sun god paradise forever and ever. We shall drink and keep drinking, rest and stay sitting, eat and continue eating. He paused and smiled while looking down, then addressed the congregation sternly.
The evil one, Michael M., has been captured by the forces of rightness and good and warmth. That is good, that is right. We must guard against terrorism and homos, against those who would seek to do us harm, to take away what is rightfully ours, our stuff. It is our stuff. And praise the sun god, we have the bullets and banks and employers and police and courts and jails that will help us to keep it. They will, by God, or they will be out of a job and will be in jail themselves, or such outcasts in their own families and neighborhoods that they will get very depressed, not being able to pay for food or cars or water or electricity, and having no real skills, they will look at the help wanted ads and wonder where in hell they fit in and wish they were dead. So help us God. Amen. Amen. He poured himself a glass of ice water from the pitcher on the marble table next to the lectern and took his time drinking it, sending out individual smiles around the church as he swished and swallowed. While holding the glass, he added conversationally, You know, we know what phone calls Mr. M. made to organize the riot and the sit-down. We know what books he took out from the library for research, and we know what videos he checked out. Michael M. rented The Big Lebowski 180 times. Doesn't that strike you as a little odd? What kind of a man does something like that? He put the glass down, touched his red tie and his white shirt and blue suit with his elegant hands, and became serious again. Yesterday we celebrated War Day and those who have slaughtered in order that we might be comfortable. It is right and good that we do so, and we do on all of our patriotic days, Flag Day, Loyalty Day. He counted each one out on his long reptile fingers. Veterans Day, Armed Forces Day, Save Your Own Ass First Day, Scattered Guts and Teeth Day, Dripping Layers of Burnt, Crisp, Brown Skin Day, Squashed Foreign Infant Eyeballs Day. He folded his hands into fists. It is right and good and warm to have traditions. They tell us who we are, where we are going. They give us steady passage in rough seas, times of trouble. For this we are thankful.
Jane excused herself to Dick and those around them to take the children to the rear. They entered the glassed-in exercise room that covered the back of the church. They changed in the dressing room and came out to join the other moms and children, to watch church and ride exercise bikes or work on stair steppers or treadmills. Jane put each of her six children against the wall with the other young ones, snapped their wrists and ankles into primary colored hard plastic locks. She stuffed a clean white and yellow sun god handkerchief into each of their mouths and went to ride her favorite exorcizer. She began visiting with the moms around her as they watched the TV in the corner of the room. They visited about children and their husbands and exercising. They talked about money and their home. "At least we're getting our bills paid," said Jane. "That's what's important." The mom on the bike next to her nodded while pedaling and watching the TV. "Yeah, not much else you can do. Just keep trying, keep going." On the TV, skinny African children were sitting on hard dust, staring at each other with bug eyes, flies on their mouths.
Pastor Steve motioned toward Dick in front of him, then back to Jane on the bike and their children attached to the wall. "We are so grateful to have candidates that recognize our values," he said. "In the coming elections, I hope you will support them. They need us. We need them. It is by the faith of Mayor Dick Evans that he has been able to survive these past difficult years. He and his administration have given us the Freedom Fondlers Act, hometown lockdown, most children behind, clean skies, thick forest, flat roads, longer, stronger sex, and breasts. For this we are thankful. Now let us pray." He raised his arms and brought them up. The congregation began to sing. In the workout room, Jane realized that the intercom was turned off. She climbed from her bike and went over to switch it on and turn the TV volume down. While she was there, she went back to riding her bike and visiting with her neighbor. The women heard the men in the church coughing and rustling papers. The microphone squeaked and someone dropped a songbook. "And now," Pastor Steve said, "we are proud to bring up someone who is one of us, someone who has served in our military, helping to bring freedom to our homes and vehicles. Please welcome Lance Larson, produce manager at Too Much Food, and staff sergeant in the Homeland National Guard. Lance," dressed in camouflage fatigues and cap, Lance Larson walked from the front row on the right side to the lectern in front of him, opposite Pastor Steve's. He made the sign of the cross and began talking about his unit patrolling, searching for terrorists, insurgents, and people they could kill to secure freedom for America, and as always, trying to find the hidden bookstores.
"We went to the door of these suspects, knowing it would make everyone more freer."
Jane and the other women on the exercisers pulled out yellow and blue pom-poms from the saddlebags and waved them as they rode.
"We pointed our weapons and hollered at the top of our voices in order to be understood. The women and children had these big, creepy bug eyes. They wouldn't close their effing sorry mouths. We stuck our effing barrels right inside their teeth and told them to suck it if that's what they wanted. They just kept looking at us like they were scared to death. All we was there was to make friends and family free back home. A friend of mine shot this one kid."
Mayor Dick and the people left in the pews chanted back and forth, taking turns, one side of the aisle and then the next. "We are the Lutherans, mighty, mighty Lutherans. We are the Lutherans, the mighty Lutherans."
"The head and hair and blood just sprayed out the back of the kid's head. I was so proud, because I knew how free I would be when I got home to attend the church of my choice."
Pastor Steve balanced by one hand on the podium to switch from his black shoes to his red running shoes. He knelt down to tie one, switched legs to tie the other, and in one leap, pulling his knees to his chest, leaped the communion rail and vaulted by somersaults down the aisle.
The lieutenant gave the sign. We pulled back out of each other's way and shot the rest of that family. Dad and the brothers in back, too, wouldn't talk. Just stared at us, so we shot them first about 100 times. It was good. Felt like we at least did something that night, not just ride around.
Mayor Dick Evans put his hand into the air like he was riding a roller coaster, starting the wave from the front left and back, then front to back on the other side of the aisle.
That whole house was full of blood running down the steps, sidewalk, into the street. I shit you negator. Sorry. Saving freedom. That's what I love. That's why I signed up. I do it again, knowing you people are behind me. The sun god blesses you.
Jean and her neighbor returned their pom-poms to the saddlebags of the exorcisers, wiped their faces with the kiwi peach handy wipes, and released their sons and daughters. The women held the children as they got back on the exercise bikes, treadmills, and stair-steppers for their closing song. And that's the news from Mount Liberty, Nebraska, where all the soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats are cowards, and all the journalists are about average.
And that's the end of our show for tonight. We'd like to thank, again, the Rock Creek Free Press. And I'd like to mention World News Trust, who host our website for us. And they do a pretty good job at providing some news on their site, worldnewstrust.com. Give it a try. That's all for tonight. Thank you very much. Good night, Mike.
Good night, Chuck. Stay warm. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Ken Lee. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
I was over in Australia during Easter, which was interesting. Interesting to note, they celebrate Easter the same way we do, commemorating the death and resurrection of Jesus by telling our children a giant bunny rabbit left chocolate eggs in the night. Now, I wonder why we're fucked up as a race. Anybody got any clues out there? Where do you get this shit from, you know? Why those two things, you know? Why not goldfish left Lincoln logs in your sock drawer, you know? As long as we're making shit up, go hog wild, you know? At least a goldfish with a Lincoln log on its back going across your floor to your sock drawer has a miraculous connotation to it.
Mommy, I woke up today and there was a Lincoln log in my sock drawer. That's the story of Jesus.